All right, so we got our appetizer in now for the real podcast.
Yes, sir.
Well, Rutchett, another week,
another podcast.
It's I haven't been outside today. Is it warm, cold?
It's good. Sunny.
Sunny?
This is amazing weather for me. This is like home. This is why I like seasons. Because it's an actual, and as a sweaty man, it's perfect. Chills. I get to wear my fresh new jacket too.
This is so like... But, you know, people who live in warmer climates, they never get to experience some of this. Like, wearing, like, a nice sort of... Sometimes in winter when it's minus 20, it sucks balls, and you can't really
argue that. The 3 to 4 months of winter where it's absolutely terrible sucks.
It's not 3 to 4 months in Toronto. Come on. It's, like, 1 or 2 months, maybe, of, like, really shitty, like, January,
last
February.
Last year it was 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, last year was particularly bad.
Recent memory was terrible. But, granted that... If you can somehow embrace that cold weather, like we played hockey, and enjoy the facets of it, I think it's worth it. Because it gets way too hot in those months, like in the summer. Sorry, in the summer months for warm climate places, that you hate the heat to some degree. Like you just want to stay inside in the same way you want to stay inside when it's really, really
that's
cold.
That's not true in places like Seattle or San Francisco, where it's just constantly. Like
but it's constantly cloudy. It's constantly raining in 15 degrees, which is great, like fashion weather, I guess. But
there's this. Have you seen the Portlandia thing where like apparently everyone in Portland wears like dark jeans and a black shirt? Actually, was it Portlandia? I think it was just like on our Portland or something. I don't know why I was on that subreddit. But there was a picture.
I want to subscribe to that.
I was watching Portlandia, and then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go on the subreddit Portland. See how
it's
like,
a good like to see what's really true about it.
Yeah. And there was this great picture of just like 10 people on the subway or on the train in a row, all with the same exact shirt and jeans. But okay, enough about weather.
Steroids.
Free
great segue from weather to steroids. I mean, if it's really rainy outside, I won't take my steroid dose.
It's true. Yeah, it's too depressing. So we had, you were telling me that you thought this was...
This was fun.
Our best topic.
Yeah, your choice was impeccable. I like the idea of, because we both love philosophy, but taking philosophy with a twist and not falling, because like it's interesting also to... when you are in a bar or you are trying to strike a conversation about somebody related to philosophy, you're like, oh, you love philosophy? I love philosophy. Let's talk about free will. Like, it's so, like, heavy and it's, you know, people have done the main arguments already. People have gone through, or not, even if they haven't, it's not an enjoyable bar topic conversation where this one, you had free will, but you kind of got a niche within that, talk about the practical aspects of things, and you assume these things, and then talk about another topic, which we both are very interested in, a very topical topic, which is steroids. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun writing, and I think also we've written for long enough now that some of our work in the past have come, at least for me. It's the writing process isn't as terrible as it always is.
Oh, okay,
it's still terrible. It's a little less terrible.
So everything I've read, or I mean, the majority of the advice I've gotten from the internet and other places about how to improve your writing is to write just consistently. There's all these stories of like the best writers and how like Stephen King gets up and every day he writes 4 hours, just nonstop, 4 hours, no matter what.
That's almost true for like any skill that you want to get really good at, like basketball, whatever it is, like write, play, shoot, whatever it is, right? Yeah. Or just take steroids.
Yeah.
Right? No.
No. Steroids do not do that.
That's what we learned.
The basic premise of our discussion these past few weeks was that I think there was a difference in society in the way we treat performance-enhancing drugs that affect your body versus drugs that affect your mind.
That's how we started, yes.
Yeah. So we ended up in a slightly different spot.
I don't even think, actually, like, to comment on that, I don't think that's necessarily true, too, because with Paul Erdos' example...
Yeah.
I watched
Erdos.
I watched his documentary. I read about him on Wikipedia.
there was no mention of Ritalin. None at all. So there's still a stigma. If it's his family, whoever it is that is getting rid of it, because if that's such a big deal, and that quote he said about mathematics being followed by falling behind
that,
for a month.
So the funny thing is that quote is pretty famous. Like my, I talked to my supervisor, my professor, and he knew about that quote. But for some reason, it doesn't seem to be mentioned in the major sort of biographies of him. So maybe it is some sort of, touchy.
Like think about it. If you told your prof openly, I'm going to go on Ritalin, like, do you think there would be a discussion on, like,
It's tough, right? Like, this is we should have discussed this, but we'll do it now. I don't know. Like, if I said, listen, I'm having a really tough time concentrating, and I just don't feel like I'm creating as good of a work as I can. And he goes, well, we have to compete with the big boys. Have some pills.
Even if it's not that, even if it's just like, I'm having a decent time concentrating. I'm just producing good work, but I just want to do more. I want to be able to optimize my potential and whatever is given to me and with this drug. And it'd be, like you can still say that it won't just be you just popping drugs and going crazy. It would be in a controlled fashion. You can treat it scientifically.
Yeah.
Like in the same way that the U.S. Postal Service team, Lance Armstrong and all of them, and Mike, what was his name? The Italian guy that was helping them out. Like it was a very, very scientific process that they were optimizing all the different variables to maximize their rides.
And people take, so they took EPO, but people take steroids. I know I've heard of a lot of actors when they have to put on a lot of bulk for some role, they can hire, like it's not illegal, right? Like you can hire someone who will basically supervise you and ensure you're taking the steroids in a good manner, like not the dosage, and help you bulk up that way. Right?
Yeah.
So on some way it's like, we have to make that distinction. Is academics and is like the intellectual pursuits, are they more like sport where we have to regulate it, or are they more like acting, I guess, and where it's just a tool, but it's not really something that...
You know, the answer there is there's just not enough money in academics versus sports.
I think that's a tough argument. You could probably sum up some stuff.
And there's not a direct... That's not a tough argument. There's way more money in sports than there is in...
There's way less professional athletes than there are professional athletes.
Sure, but I'm talking about the total sum of money. And that's true, and that's another reason too, is that there are way less professional athletes and there's way more money, so each athlete is competing for a larger sum of money too, like the per individual money that they're going after.
Like, I'm not
sure... That makes it more of a... reason for people to regulate it. When the money is like distributed across so many people, they don't care as much. There's not more of an incentive structure to that. I think it's a lot more direct with steroids and your body, because the mind is also one abstraction layer higher, right? There is so many like psychology versus physiology, right? There's even in science, it's considered less of a science because it's less of a hard science. So there's more of like that tangential link to it too.
Right, you're saying that it might be a bit more, the effects aren't as direct. I guess one thing I will say about maybe academics versus sports is that in academics, there's not really a product that you're, so to speak, putting on the ice, or there's not as much of an expectation, although there is, right? Like this is where the analogy becomes a little gray. You still, there's committees on universities that will look for, plagiarisms and all these codes of ethics, which is similar to what, competition committees do in different professional leagues or whatever. There's sort of like regulating bodies that go in and say, there's certain things that we're not allowed to do, even though they may create better, at the end of the day, it might look like it's producing something that's good, we have to regulate it, right?
Yeah.
So it's, like, I agree that maybe sports is, there's more money, but, like, why?
But I think you're right about the fact that there isn't a product. There may be stats, right?
Yeah.
There are how many, like, the H index that you're talking about.
Yeah, just amount of citations.
Yeah.
There's
a bunch of individual stats.
Of course.
But academics. Like where the analogy falters is that in academics, a subject would be a team. Like math itself, like math, the entire subject. The discipline of math across the world would be a team in sports, because all of the individual players are the academics in there, right? So they would be, you can have their stats on it, but the entire product is mathematics, right?
But it's not.
But there's nothing being, mathematics isn't being watched, or people aren't paying for mathematics.
But there's different institutions within math that are competing against each other. So how would you, what's the analogy there, right? Like,
are they really competing against each other the same way that there's direct competition against teams? Like, that is a huge leap. That is a huge leap. Because they're competing against each other for what? Like, reputation?
Yeah.
There isn't direct, like,
people.
We play you, I win, you lose. Right? That's so much more tangible. And I think that's a major part of why
that happens. Okay, so you're saying, because that is more tangible, then the effect of drugs is much more.
So there's three reasons. So that reason,
yeah.
The reason for what did I say in the beginning? I'm blanking here. So there's the reason that it's not as tangible for teams and competitions for academics. The second one was, it's not as tangible for the mind versus the physiological effects.
Right.
And the third one was money. Like, there isn't enough money in there as well.
Interesting. So do you think this will ever change if it's more of a incentivized?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's going to change, though, because I don't want it to change. That's part of the reason I think why you chose to do your PhD and go into academics and not go into the corporate world, because it's a lot more genuine of a process. People, for the sake of acquiring truth, getting knowledge, right?
Right.
You can do both, and you can successfully.
But you just said a genuine of a process, so maybe we should regulate drugs to make it more genuine.
Sure, I agree. it could be regulated. I don't think there is necessarily a bad side, is as long as you do it scientifically and you are aware of the consequences to your actions. It's the same thing that you do with alcohol, right? It's not even as scientific as anything else, but if you're trying to optimize your brain or optimize your fun, why not? I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
What we did get into further from this is I don't think we even talked about this as much as we discussed this just now, but the other aspect of it was, if you assume there is no free will, or if you assume there is free will,
yeah,
how do you analyze steroid use in sports? Like,
yeah,
the example you gave was, what's the difference between a mother giving their child this magic, like an unborn child, this magical pill that will increase their height,
yeah,
coordination, all that fun stuff,
yeah,
versus somebody taking drugs.
So I think that's even, maybe that's one way to approach the free will issue that maybe isn't as taboo as just saying there's no free will. It's just poking at, you know, the concept of what we feel like is responsibility, right? So right there, I think it's definitely a murky area. You know, how do you, like, which things is someone, what things is someone responsible for and what things are they not? Because the hypothetical drug that the mother takes is not really that far away from being true, right? Like, you can genetically modify things and maybe we can screen someone's DNA and say, oh, they are a higher probability to be, like, above 6 feet, whatever. So a mother can do all these things and, you know, end up at the end of the day with someone who's maybe, like, a great swimmer. And is that, did she take, like, you know, if...
The question would be, like, would she be held responsible, or will the son or daughter be held responsible for their mother's...
Well, exactly,
actions,
yeah.
Right?
What's the difference between the mother taking the pill and
So it'd be, like, equivalent to saying, like, so theoretically, if a mother did that, and the Olympic committee or any competition committee said, these people, whoever have gotten these special drugs before they were born are not allowed to compete.
See, I don't know.
It would be like, it would be the equivalent of saying that if there is a very, very, very good genetic pairing between two possible parents, if they have sex with each other and produce a child, those children can't compete because it's just not fair.
Well, maybe I think we got towards this at the end of our topic, but maybe they wouldn't say you can't compete, but maybe they would regulate it. Like, it would be a different bracket or something. Like, you're sort of like boxing. You would just say, you know, a 5'8", 160-pound guy is not going to fight some heavyweight, right? So, you would just, each sport would have to decide, you know, where is that, what things are important for that sport, and where do we draw the line in terms of, you know, if you're Michael Phelps and you have webbed toes, go in the webbed toes, like, bracket.
That'd be so hard to categorize, but...
Well, no, like, webbed toes bracket, there's a category.
Like, how do you determine the lower threshold, higher threshold for that?
How do you determine, what is boxing? There's numbers, right? Like, so you can just set numbers. How do they determine illegal sticks in hockey? They just set some arbitrary numbers.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The other thing is that...
it's sport. That's the beauty of it. Like, we can...
Yeah, it's all arbitrary.
And
you just have to set it. And, like, once you accept it's true, then you just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
It's not really... Like, there's a lot of judges in Olympic sports that are absolutely ridiculous, but you still watch it and say, like, that's interesting, and still yell at them at the same time.
Yeah.
But one thing that... I don't know if I mentioned this, that could be an addition to that, other than, like, just making it, regulated across the board, is making it very open. So anybody that, like, make it completely legal, but anybody that uses it...
Sorry, like, when you say it is...
Like, steroids.
Steroids. Or drugs. Yeah, PEDs. Yeah.
PEDs. Make them completely legal.
Yeah.
But regulate, like... Or just get the audience to know exactly what everybody's taking. So if somebody wants to compete clean, you're like, okay, he came in fifth place, but he was clean.
Yeah.
And then maybe have like a genetic makeup, like your natural web toes before.
But that's almost like having different brackets, right? Because people will do that. They'll say, even if you put them all in one big pool, you still say, but you know, the top Canadian was this guy. So you might as well have like, just the Canadian race, right? And at the end.
Yeah. And the argument that we'd be making here is, just to summarize, is that taking these drugs would be performance matching, right? Because we're not...
So that's a different... Let's
that's the reason why, though. That's why we're making these equal.
No, not exactly. I think there's two different points here. There's that, which is something that we basically came up on at the end of our discussion. But... I think there's also another point here that we fundamentally sort of put more emphasis on these drugs that we take when we're training, whereas perhaps factors that are also unfair in a sense contribute much more to our position or the way we're going to perform the sport than the drugs themselves. So it doesn't really make sense to... you know, regulate this thing, but not regulate this other thing that may have a much bigger impact.
So that was under the assumption of no free will.
No, I think that's, you don't even need to talk about free will in this case.
Yeah, it is. But that's saying that we, because like the counterpoint to that is that people who are taking the drugs have the choice to take the drugs, right?
Yeah, so, but they don't have the choice to
exactly
all the other genetics.
That's why it's right. That's why it should be illegal. That's the argument, that you have the choice to do it. It's, we are telling you you can't.
No, I think that's a different thing. I think at the end of the day, we're trying to make sports fair. And how do you make sports fair? Well, you make sure everyone has an equal chance. So if we're saying don't take PEDs because it's gonna make things unfair, how can we say that while at the same time still having all these genetic lottery things that are totally unfair?
Yeah, sure. The genetic lottery things are, I think, like an assumption that you make of sports. Like, when people talk about LeBron James, you know, like, people don't give him credit for having the physique that he does, but that is a reason why he is really fantastic. He's really good at basketball. That's an assumption that I think everybody makes with sports.
the reason why people argue against making it like PEDs illegal is that those other things, it's a genetic lottery. We're assuming these things with sports because it's all arbitrary at the end of the day. But beyond that, we want to see who, given this genetic lottery, who is going to maximize and who's going to be that Cinderella story, that, you know, that really short Muggsy Bogues. Like, who's going to be that guy? And we're going to appreciate what it is. In spite of it. And it's an arc. It's not a very tangential thing where there's, like, very clear,
right,
you know, this guy's this guy's that. But
okay, so fine. I agree with you that at the end of the day, it might be, even though it's unfair, we're just saying, given the genetic lottery, let's just say, let's limit it to that, and let's make other enhancing drugs illegal. Fine. Now let's talk about, sorry, did you have?
I want to say one thing, though, because I think I need to clarify what we mean by making PEDs a matching thing. Because that's a
different topic. Okay, so
that's really, because we've assumed that in this whole discussion, but that was a big revelation that we had, that we, like, because I even mentioned the first post as a shortcut.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's just a general stereotype. But I was very, when I read that Malcolm Gladwell article, I was like, wow, that's a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily exactly one-to-one for all PEDs, but I think it's worth at least mentioning
before
we go on.
Right. So I think, for me, this sort of seed was planted when I read I think I've read a bunch of comments about Lance Armstrong, and people said, you know, everyone's sort of jumping on hate Lance bandwagon, but do you think, like, if I gave you, what's the drug?
EPO.
EPO. You would win the Tour de France seven times in a row, whatever it was for him? No, of course not, right? So the fact that he took EPO, of course, is, you know, if it was against the rules, it was against the rules. But, you know, we need to separate that from the fact that he still was an incredibly hardworking guy, clearly incredibly talented.
And some genetic lottery that was already inherently there.
Exactly. Yeah. And then from this new perspective of, you know, really at the end of the day, the EPO didn't, if everyone was taking EPO, what it did was that it just made it even more fair. We should give him even more credit because everyone was taking EPO, now their hard work was the only thing that separated.
I would also compare it analogously to a Formula One team, because
right, that's an interesting.
Because not only did it, so like the analogy there would be that there is a mechanical team that is helping you maximizing the drivers and the car's function, right? And the mechanical team was his doctor.
That's brilliant. We didn't talk about this, but that's a brilliant analogy. Because also, sorry to break up your thought here, but just immediately I have all these things, like, you know, light bulbs popping up in my head. So you know how the F1 league, they set their engineering, their hardware essentially, they set and fix it every year. So you can't modify engines and things like that once the season has begun. So, like, this year or the past year, like, Mercedes-Benz, like, figured out something.
Yeah.
And, like, they just won basically almost everything because they just had a better hardware design. So could you do the same thing with these types of, you know, performance?
Yeah, and that's what I think people don't give credit. Because the thing is also...
You have a chemist working for you. You have chemists working for...
But that's what he was. He was an amazing... Like, the U.S. Postal Service team, he was the best, one of the best leading scientists about... on EPO and all these drugs and all these, I think he did his PhD.
Right.
Very, very respected.
Sorry, who is this?
I forgot his name. Google it.
This is the French guy?
Italian guy.
Italian guy.
And that, I think you gotta, the other thing with that whole era was all the top performers, all the top teams were on drugs. Like, that was, like, it's known. It wasn't just the U.S. Postal Service team. So when you analyze those championships by Lance Armstrong, not only should you say that he, EPO maximized his ability to suffer, and he, suffered the most and maximized his potential, maybe other people didn't do as much, but they should give credit to the mechanics and that the science of their team too.
Yeah.
That should be a factor into that analysis, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they had a better team for that as well. They had a better team for maximizing EPO because I think they took it in shorter dosages
and then longer dosages because it was better. Like that's what the science proved. So that's what they did. And other teams didn't necessarily do that as well.
Yeah.
And if everybody else was doing it, then, you know, maybe there was some factor of like them working harder because they had the chance to work harder because EPO, it's not a magic drug. It isn't. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
right?
Of course.
It doesn't let you win. But
we're not
going to
win the.
It just lets you work harder than you normally could because you just have more, a little bit more energy to do so.
Right. So at the end of the day, not only are we discounting the effort that this team put in, we're also discounting some of the science that maybe went into it. And, you know, it's. On one hand, it might have given them a disadvantage or an advantage, but on the other hand, if everyone's taking it and they actually found a way to innovate and take this better, and not only take it better, but also conceal it better, because that's another element, right? Which is maybe something you don't want to say is good, but I think they did that too.
Of course, like at the end of the day, like he still was a complete miserable human being when he. Like,
yeah. The lying part
the
is...
The lying, different. Yeah, all that. Like, that's terrible. But when you're just...
Well, he wasn't... Like,
he was. No, he ruined people's lives, too. Like, he called people out and went above and beyond to make sure that, you know, their careers were over and all these extraordinary
right.
measures that you wouldn't otherwise have to take if you were just lying, right?
But
that was terrible.
But he also, you know, had the Live Strong Foundation or whatever.
Yeah, that's a whole other ballgame to get into. That's really it's an amazing organization. They've raised a lot of money and all that.
Yeah,
people are
complicated. Is the answer?
Of course. But like, I'm just saying that was still wrong, and also the fact that it was still illegal. Like, granted, all this analysis is really interesting, but I think if people made it legal. And if it was legal in cycling, that would be a really... I would be interested in cycling a lot more to see how the science of... Like, if you can have, like,
it's
on a feed, it'll be like, let's look at... Let's, like, take a look into the pit team.
Yeah, well, they would analyze the same way F1, when you watch a race, they'll analyze the engineers.
And they'll have their, like... Yeah. Their, you know, their EPO count.
He's like the Terminator, basically. They have, like, all these different, like... metrics about, you know, look at his red blood cell count and all this stuff and all that.
The one problem with all of this is this whole entire, like, making drugs or PEDs legal and all that fun stuff, I think it's great, but I think the effect that it would have culturally towards children and people taking it at a much younger age than it should would be pretty catastrophic.
I think we can treat it the same way we treat alcohol or other types of drugs like that. There's just going to be rules where...
Yeah, you know, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be the same thing that people are already doing it now. Like anything with just making something legal versus not making it legal, it's more cool to do it or it's not as cool
exactly.
to do it.
It's, there's all these different factors. Like I've heard, you know, you probably heard this in your health class too, like steroids. Like you can get steroids. I never knew where to get steroids, but apparently you could get them. Places, so it's already sort of like this.
But it is market. The thing is, the one difference is that it is stigmatized, right? There isn't a negative stigma towards like weed or alcohol, even in prohibition times, like prohibition times for weed right now, or prohibition times for alcohol.
Yeah.
But there is negative stigma towards steroids. But if you remove that negative stigma, then it may increase with children. Because if you remove that negative stigma and make it illegal for children and not adults, then you're in prohibition time for alcohol, which is the catastrophic thing, right? It would be removing it and making it legal for children as well, which I don't think necessarily would make sense because it's just not it's not chemically responsible for a developing body to take steroids. And I think that's like.
I think that's a different. Yeah, that's a.
That'll have like an effect long term culture.
We've sort of gone a bit off topic here because we're. I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about free will.
I wanted to mention that because that was. It's definitely a caveat to our.
I agree. So one thing we talked, maybe we can switch gears a little bit, and so you talked about we talked more not just sports but also about society, and I think one of our major points that we disagreed on, maybe, I don't know how much we disagreed about it, was whether or not if we as a society admit that we have very little free will, or that we don't have free will at all, does that immediately lead to what you called, you know, some sort of dystopia, or like a essentially chaos? And I thought, no, that's not true, because there's, on the surface, it might seem that way, but I think if you really think about it, it's not really true. And there's other people who I've inspired my opinion from. The biggest inspiration was Sam Harris wrote a book called Free Will, and he basically argued a lot of the points I argue. But I haven't read that whole book. I've just heard some stuff, so maybe my opinion differs. Anyways, so what do you your main thoughts were that a society cannot function practically without the concept of free will.
Even if it's the illusion of free will. If it doesn't exist, I think people need to believe that it does exist for people to accept meaning in life and to act and to do and to live the way that they do. Because evolutionarily speaking, that's how we've grown up. Right, we've seen that we do X and Y results. It's an action X that we did. But that's
you can do that all with no free will. Like obviously, no, but that do and X and
yeah. Y. But then no, like let me elaborate.
Yeah,
and if the result is really good, then you feel good about doing X. Right, if the result is really bad, then you don't do it. But you take that internally. It's tied in together with your emotions. It's not a completely rational process, right? There is no distinction between that.
But that's even less of an argument for free will, right? Like that's
no. I'm saying that's the practical aspect of it. That you have to be able to internalize that. You have to be able to internalize your actions for what it produces, when it produces good things, and you have to be able to internalize when it produces bad things. Because that's how you affect your behavior and you improve your behavior.
You're saying you need to be able to feel like you can choose between the good things and the bad things.
And you have to be able to feel good about the things that you do that are good, but if you and feel bad. But if because you feel, I did it or I didn't do it.
But you can still feel good. In fact, I would argue that what you just said might lead people to believe they have less free will because they're saying, wait, like there's some sort of subconscious thing that's happening. I can't control it at all. And it's making me feel good or bad and these sort of intuitions about certain things that really I haven't chosen at all. So there's some sort of like automatic feedback thing that's happening in my brain, and on that level, I'm very much like an automated machine.
But that's what that's. So this is again, this is this very binary aspect of it. I don't think people think of it like that. I don't think people think that I'm 100% choosing this thing. They know. I know that you know when I wake up in the morning, I'm really groggy. I'm gonna be in a very different decision state than I am when I've had my coffee.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, there's people understand that. So that's why I think it's they accept that there are these things. I'm born with five fingers and this human mind and two eyes and all these things that are just given.
Yeah.
And it forces me to live in this world in this certain way. But within that scope, there is a continuum in which I can decide things or not. Probabilistically, maybe I'll decide this more than that in these certain contexts. But for the most part, you still have choices within those things. And and believing even that you have some choices within that framework is what I think is practically important.
Okay, so what do you think of the argument I brought up about in my last post about the sort of the guy who decides to the severely broken clock who decides to like murder and rape everyone, and you said that would be one of the components that would make this type of society not work. Whereas I said that those people are exactly the type of people you want to lock away, and that most people would not do this, and they would instead.
No, so so the argument more was about how to fix these people, right? Like, so what would be the process?
I think the fixing would be the same in whether we accept the way of free will or not. Those kind of people, you just put them away because they're
sure. So, but like, if so, let's take it that there is a possibility, a small possibility of them being able to be fixed. What I said was, I agree that on the scale of free will, I think we should have a shift towards thinking that we don't have as much control. We should put more onus on
you know, socioeconomic factors and all these other things that come into, like environmentally especially,
yeah,
that come into your decision-making process, and even your genetics place more of an emphasis on that. So we do that, and by doing that, we treat these people in fixing them rather than like calling them like crazy psychopaths and, you know, labeling them and like shutting them in a corner and throwing them away. So when we do that, there's a small chance maybe we can fix these people. So if there is that chance, when Jerry, John, this dude who's been murdering, raping people, bad guy.
Fucking Jerry.
Fucking Jerry. If there is that chance and he can internalize his actions to some degree, saying that I got better because I put this much effort into getting better, I think that would be much better, it would produce a much better result than just throwing this person away in a corner and trying to fix them and fixing them by throwing them away, because he will never have that. He'd be like, this is just me, this is what I've been programmed to do. And maybe that's not completely rational reasoning for Jerry or John or whoever is in this situation, but that's what you have to consider. People's like intuitive reasoning when you have this kind of idea that there is no free will, that's how people are going to reason. And you, do you want, like, is there going to be more chaos with that? Yes, I completely think so, because I think there'd be a better way to approach it would be to think of it and to act with a continuum, but just shift it.
So I think this is the point we discussed in the blog was slightly different than what you're talking about. I agree that throwing them away is not the best course of action. That's not what I was arguing for. I was just saying that, and I don't think right now, we do stigmatize for a number of different reasons, but I don't think in a lack of free will society, you would just throw people away, period. You would try to fix them. Just like with clocks, you don't just throw them away unless they're like completely pieces of shit. And I think on some level that might end up happening with certain people. But you still, there's, you know, you're saying that for the person themselves, they need to feel like they have some free will.
There's a better chance for them to be fixed than...
But what I said in my post was that if you just accept... So I agree that this continuum also could work. But if you accept that you have basically no control over this... Or no free, not that this is gets into semantics, but it's not the fact that you don't have control, but it's the fact that
you don't have control. If you don't have free will, there's no,
because
control.
There's no you. It's the whole sentence is ridiculous.
Yes.
There's no you, which you're right. Yeah. So if that's the case, you still have to basically you can accept your. I think it's this dichotomy, right? Like there's no you, but you can accept yourself better because. You just think, you know what,
but
it's
that's
not
my
fault.
That's
not
my
point,
that you can't, the chances of you getting fixed in that context is much worse than the chances of you getting fixed if you accept that, for the most part, it's not my fault, but there's a small window where I do have some choice that I can make to get a little bit better, right? Then it's just saying it's not my fault at all, I'm not going to get better because I can't control anything. I think it's that significantly
but you're
better
saying,
chances.
It's not that they can't control anything. Like clearly they can do things, right? Like it's not, you're not, this is where I think this argument does usually lead to sort of dead ends, because you start going back and forth about these kind of things. It's like, well, clearly I can either pick up this cup or not. So like, what do you mean there's no free will?
But that's what I'm saying. There's no concept of you. So people, like, it's difficult to implement practically. Like,
okay.
There's people need to feel that illusion of there is me, even if it doesn't exist.
So my response to that would be that they still would feel that. That's just by saying that we have no free will doesn't rob people of that feeling. It's really how, by making that statement, how do you interpret the different laws and rules you're going to put in society. But let's move on, because it's almost 40 minutes now. So we'll the one thing we talked about was I brought up the fact that if you do have this continuum, which I do think is a good idea, you in like a court of law and in a general society, to me it seemed like that would be a very very hairy area to implement that in, because then you have to make, you have to start drawing these lines that are arbitrary and are difficult to draw. And what I instead argued, or not instead, but I said maybe this kind of thing would be much better implemented in the scene of sports, or in the sporting arena, because there we do draw arbitrary lines that we're totally comfortable with. So should we now look at the whole issue of PDs and responsibility and things like that, and shift sort of our paradigm on this continuum to better include all these factors that maybe before we just thought was...
I 100% think we should, because I think as a society, we, at least here, we like to live in absolutes and like to live in very, very... Like when people talk about baseball, they talk about this like historic... like stats that are so pure and so elegant, but it's never been like that. There's been so many random factors all along the way, from, you know, the 20s Yankees and gambling, and like there's been so many other random influences all throughout. We've always lived in gray. To think that sports are in this magical absolute lens are complete bullshit. So we love to live in that world, and we love to present the arguments and be stern with these arguments with that when you're making these rules, when you're talking about it. But that's not how things exist. That's not how things actually work. It's easier that way, though, because I think people feel, okay, you know, these things go behind closed doors, so I don't have to have it in my consciousness. But when it's in the open playing field, then people have to think about it. People have to feel guilty about it, even just accepting it or not accepting it, because it's so much easier to say, oh yeah, I never lie, I'm always honest, right? I'm an honest person all the time. But we always live in gray. I'm always moral. I'm a vegetarian, so I'm a vegetarian, so I believe in nonviolence completely. I never break that rule, right? It's these very easy concepts. But then when you actually put it on paper, that's why I don't think society's ever going to move towards that, because it's such a, like, to live in that gray is very difficult. I think Europe does it a little bit better for non-sporting things. They live in a lot more gray areas. Like, I think even in a lot of the Finnish countries,
Finnish countries is the only one.
Not Finnish.
Scandinavia.
Scandinavia. Well, there are a lot of Finnish countries. They need the one. Scandinavian countries, I think the way that they even handle it in the justice system, there's a lot more fixing than there is just sending people away.
Okay.
But I think that's the fundamental problem with actually doing it. But I do, to answer your question directly, yes, they definitely should be a shift.
So let's leave off at this point. I'll say that I totally agree that this should happen. But as we discussed in our sports section, part of the reason we love sports is because it does give us these black and whites. And doing this maybe will, in a sense, remove that.
The Cinderella story of this guy.
Well, winning and losing, you know, all these types of things. Whereas here now we're going to add all these conflating factors that may make it a bit less pure. And maybe that's good, because that's more human, and that's the way the world
and
is.
And also, I think to some degree, people don't want to have these discussions when they're talking about sports.
Yeah.
People don't want to talk
because
about
it. They want it to be completely fair and this ideal.
Well, they just want to believe that. They want to... It's a magical place. We don't want to talk about all these moral gray areas and genetics and all that. They just don't want that.
It's
in
just
their consciousness.
Winning and losing.
That's. I think that's part of the reason. Like,
and
you
not
don't
even
want
ties.
To, you don't want to go to the bar and be like, "Oh, this guy did it this way," and then get into a heated discussion about is that better or is that not better? Because once you do make it legal,
people do get into those kind of discussions about the best ever. Right? Like, people always.
But now
LeBron
it's
or Kobe or whatever. LeBron.
But with PEDs, it becomes more of a discussion on the genetic factors and the science behind it. I think in certain sports, namely cycling, that would be sweet. Like, I would be way more interested in cycling if there was a more F1 type environment with it. Like, you could see like his EPO count and just like take that for what it is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be like, this guy's the number one winner, this guy did it with this guy did it with that. That'd be such an interesting discussion, right? I think with team sports, maybe a little bit different, but that'd be really cool. I think we should make our own new cycling
league.
Cycling league. All drugs are legal. come here and just kind of be like very open with it and show your scientists that you're working with, and that'd be great. Just have like a monitor on screen.
Yeah, we'll call it like B1 or C1 or something. Like just like, all right, we'll leave it at that. I have a topic idea for next week.
Sweet.
Do
you have any jokes? We didn't have any jokes.
I know. I didn't have any jokes. I have some terrible... I was reading like this like awful joke thread, but...
We'll have a good one for
next week. All right. Cheerio.